Welcome to the DAO of WoW, a podcast about the intersection of technology, society, and internet culture with a dash of philosophy and art for good measure. I'm Laura Hilliger.
You said that in a really kind of like downward voice, but I'm going to say I'm Doug Belshaw. This podcast season is currently partially unfunded. You can support this podcast and other We Are Open projects and products at opencollective.com/We Are Open.
I feel like I'm usually the one that's like, oh my God, hey guys, what's up? So I'm going to be really low key today.
Okay, yeah, you do that then. Okay, so this series is all about having a ramble chat, yeah?
Yes, and I just this morning listened back to the first episode, which we have not posted yet. We're recording the second episode, even though we haven't posted the first one. And I was really enjoying our ramble chat. We talked about some fully random stuff. It was great. That was pretty funny. So it's a nice change of pace from season 8, where we were very organized.
I enjoyed season 8, but yeah, you're right. It's good to have a change of pace and things. And maybe we'll invite other people into our ramble chat in future. Maybe we'll do that.
We should do that, yeah.
Where do you want to start today? What's top of mind?
Well, the first link on the list, I actually cut out of the last episode because there were some internet issues. But we did already talk about 6 degrees of Wikipedia, but only for a moment. And it was, you know, the audio was crap. So want to start there because it's still funny.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So we've got some stuff to talk about Wikipedia, actually, since we last recorded, I think. I don't think we talked about when Adam Proctor tried to make a Wikipedia page for me.
No, we didn't. And yes, so let's start with 6 degrees of Wikipedia, which, dear listeners, is a very cool website, 6degreesofwikipedia.com. And basically, you can put in 2 concepts, 2 words, 2 people, 2 whatever, and the tool will find the shortest path from one thing to the next. So I just put in the word robot and William Shakespeare. It's only 2 degrees of separation. The history of science fiction, and that apparently links over to William Shakespeare. So
I've put in verifiable credentials, which was the last Wikipedia page that I edited, and I've put in bonobo monkeys, those very horny monkeys, which one of my favorite musicians is named after.
Okay.
So it's creating the links, and there's a lot of links. There we go. And it says there are 352 paths with 4 degrees of separation from verifiable credentials to bonobo. There we go.
4 degrees. That's kind of cool. Mm. Yeah. I like this one. It goes from robot to dementia to William Shakespeare.
Who knew?
Yep. That makes me want to read all the pages. Mm. Cool.
Anyway, we were talking about Wikipedia last week, and we were, you know, had a conversation with Adam. Hi, Adam, if you're listening, who's one of our gaming buddies and an all-around top person. You mentioned that you edited Wikipedia for an entire year, every single day, and no one ever commented on it. Tell us about that.
Okay, so this was early in my interneting, I guess, like maybe 2010, 2011. A new year came around. I had been at some open event and had met a couple of Wikipedians. And I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, new year, like New Year's resolution, I'm going to edit Wikipedia. So I started and I made it through the entire year. I never told anybody about it, didn't brag about it until now, like over a decade later. Hey, everybody, brag. And I just went in and I like did lots of formatting stuff, what we call wiki gardening, all kinds of different pages. So it was just, yeah. And I racked up, actually more than 365 edits because like, you know, it saves every time you save, yeah, it's an edit. But I just set aside, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes a day to do a Wikipedia edit, and made it through the whole year and never actually heard anything from anybody. I don't know if it's because I was editing all kinds of different random pages or...
Well, I was going to ask you what kind of things you're doing. And you mentioned being a wiki gardener. And when we've had Badge Wiki, which is using the same software, we've explicitly created badges, haven't we, for like a wiki fairy making things look better, wiki gardener making sure everything's in the right place, and all that kind of thing. So it's good to know that you're a gardener offline and online.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the beginning, you know, the first couple of months, I really tried to make like good edits, but then it was like just this compulsive, I have to do my edit today. And so the later in the year it got, the easier the edits. So by the end, I was just like, you know, making, this should be a header, there should be a you know, a content split here, whatever, like easy.
Was it a bit like Duolingo, like you start off doing loads of XP and all these things, and then eventually you're just like, oh, what's the shortest path towards me completing my streak?
And what number are you on nowadays with your Duolingo streak?
266, I want to say.
I am beating you. I'm on 274. Yes, and I am definitely, you know, every day I'm like, ah, oh, man, I haven't done my Duolingo. Hold on. I'm going to do it like in 2 minutes while also cooking dinner.
Oh, I know. You have to have a routine. So I didn't do it just there, but usually when I have lunch and I sit down for lunch, I do Duolingo while I'm doing that, which is sad because it means I have lunch by myself. And I used to have lunch with my wife back in the day, but now we don't coordinate lunchtime, sadly.
Maybe you should have a second lunch.
Well, I had two breakfasts today. So I had my
pre-breakfast breakfast.
So I've got this new thing, right? So there's a website which people in the UK might know about called Hot UK Deals. And I'm sure I've mentioned it to you before, Laura. So this is literally, I love this website. I could talk about this website all day. So not only is it a great place to find like good deals for stuff, but the knowledge within that community, and we're talking millions of people who've got accounts, the knowledge within that community of like, well, yeah, it's cheaper, but actually it's not the best product in this category. What you want to send is this, and you learn all this kind of stuff. And the third thing is like, it's really well designed as a website, like to get you to the stuff that you want and the structure of the data and whatever. Anyway, on Hot UK Deals, I found this deal on Amazon for branched chain amino acids, so BCAAs, which are zero calories and help build muscle. And also just if they got all the right nutrients and stuff together, make you feel amazing. So I had a strawberry, kiwi and banana smoothie like with this stuff this morning. And I don't know if you've ever, like you must have done when you've had smoothies yourself, like afterwards you feel a bit zingy. Like you feel like you've got like your fingertips are fizzing and stuff. I felt a little bit like that. And so when I went to the gym, I managed to leg press 280 kilograms, which is 3 times my body weight, which I don't know if I've told you this already, Laura. I think I have, but I'm quite impressed by myself.
What does this have to do with second lunch?
So that was my first breakfast, and I came back and had second breakfast, and then I had an omelette with leftover stuff inside for lunch, yeah.
Okay, so, but you're still not answering the question, why no second lunch? Are you full? Or you're never full, you're always eating, so.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? Let's say you have a snack mid-afternoon, right? Depending on the size of that snack, you could call it second lunch, but second lunch isn't really a category that people use. Second breakfast is a category that people use. So I feel like maybe we're inventing second lunches here.
I feel like we should just have second any mealtime. Second lunch, second snack, second dinner. Why not?
Well, when you're in the UK, you can have breakfast, second breakfast, 11s, you could have, I guess. You could have lunch. You could have high tea. You could have tea, then dinner. Then you could have supper, and then you could have a midnight snack. So there's lots of options if you're in the UK for eating.
Dear listener, I am just staring at Doug with all of his opinions on food. So let's go back to, we were going to talk about Wikipedia because you finally got a Wikipedia page that was immediately taken down.
For 30 minutes. Now, we're not going to name any names here, but we both know somebody who spuriously got a Wikipedia page because they invented, and I'm putting scare quotes around that you can't see, dear listener, but they invented something which was just basically putting two things together. Now, the reason that that happened was because if you invent something, you're notable enough to have a Wikipedia page, but it was completely spurious and hacking the system. So that person is no more famous than I am or Laura is or whoever, but they've got their own Wikipedia page. Now, do I need my ego stroked by having a Wikipedia page? Yes, I do. So,
I mean, you did invent the eight essential elements of digital literacies. Like, that is an invention. It is an invention of a framework. So,
well, does that as count? I tell my kids all the time, I'm kind of a big deal on the internet, right? Like, so, it would be nice to have a Wikipedia page. Stephen Downs, right? Because it's not the done thing to create your own Wikipedia page, right? So Stephen Downs, who has one now, he basically said, look, here's all the information you need in one place if you want to create a Wikipedia page. Now, he's what, in his 60s, has invented, co-invented the theory of connectivism, done loads of important stuff. I'm being a little bit facetious when I'm talking about myself. Stephen Downs definitely needs a Wikipedia page. Maybe that's a way of going about it. Now, Adam, bless him, just went a bit Leroy Jenkins and just started creating a Wikipedia page for me instead of doing the thing which you're supposed to do, which is create in a sandbox, add all your evidence to all this kind of stuff, and then got a little bit upset that, you know, someone took down the page for me not being notable enough within about 30 minutes. I just think it's funny, although I would like a Wikipedia page one day.
Yeah. I don't know. Everybody wants a Wikipedia page. Like, we don't have to pretend that our egos are, you know, so non-existent today. Although my ego is a lot different than it was 15 years ago. But yeah, it would be nice.
I think there's a way around this.
Do we have anything else on Wikipedia?
For anyone listening, I think there's a way to do this, right? And I think the way is this. And you and I could totally do this ourselves or whatever. So if you can create links on Wikipedia to pages that don't exist, i.e. pages that should exist, right? So, for example, on the Web Literacy Map page, which exists, and I created that back when I worked at Mozilla, it doesn't mention me, but it could just do double square brackets, Doug Belshaw, and that page doesn't exist. It would show up red, and if you clicked on it, it would ask you to create that page. Then I could mention myself on the page around digital literacies and web literacy and open badges and verifiable credentials, and eventually someone might go, oh, this person keeps popping up, let's create a page for them. I think that's the way to do it, potentially. So, yeah, I might do that. Because, yeah, again, I'm not going to pretend that I don't want a Wikipedia page. Of course I do. I'm human.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like sprinkling your name in everywhere is more work than it's worth. Like, what's the benefit? You get a Wikipedia page at the end, but like I said, you know, you can go and edit pages all you want. It's not like anybody will notice. So you might be waiting for that red link for a long time. But anyways, moving on.
Yes, moving on.
Do we have any other Wikipedia-related talky-talk? Uh-oh. I wish you would have got it in fiber today.
Well, I've got half of fiber. So they eventually, after this is the third attempt, they have now done the external work. The first two times, they brought a ladder, which wasn't long enough. And the second time, they brought those, what's called a cherry picker, the little lift that takes you up, you know. But they didn't have a third person to stop the traffic while they did that, so they couldn't do it then. And this time, they've come along, and they still haven't got a ladder long enough, apparently, but they've decided to put the wire a bit lower. So that's the external work. The internal work's being done tomorrow. And then since we recorded the last podcast, I think we've bought a house. So we'll be moving out of this place in 8 weeks' time anyway. So, boom.
And the new house already has fiber.
The new house, because they've only recently cabled the area, the new house can get fiber. So we'll just move the account over. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Cool. All right. Well, what do we want to talk about now?
Right. Well, here's some things
which I really do wonder what listeners think about these ramble chats. You know, I wonder if people.
To some extent.
We have internet issues.
I could put my hotspot on as well, although I've nearly run out of data for this month. There we go, I'll do that. Where were we up to?
I'll just cut that out. I'll cut out a few minutes here from us talking over each other.
So in terms of where to go next, I have moved Thought Shrapnel from WordPress to Microblog. And I've started posting some stuff on there, and There's a few things I've put on there about UK schooling and the clusters divide and how they're trying to get around that, which is actually more interesting than it sounds. OpenAI's woefully inadequate attempts to stop electoral disinformation. We could also talk about Taylor Swift and deepfakes and all that kind of stuff, which might take us into the feminism stuff. And the death of consensus reality, which is reflections on an interview with Asa Raskin, who was at Mozilla at the same time as us, and Nita Farahani, yes, that's how you say it, who was the person who spoke in that episode on their podcast, Your Undivided Attention, last summer, that I sent to you because it was great.
Yeah. I actually just the other day listened to the Your Undivided Attention episode that you recently sent me and Stephen Downs on Mastodon about looking at AI development through the lens of storytelling and myth. And I thought that it was really interesting that, like, there were just so many interesting little bits and bobs in that episode. And thinking the thing that struck me the most was the part where he said, we have to ask ourselves why we're trying to create an intelligence that's greater than ourselves. You know, it just sent me on this whole philosophical, like, it really is a philosophical question. Why? You know, because he talks about the idea that a lot of tech bros and a lot of like AI enthusiasts or general intelligence, AGI enthusiasts, say, well, if we just had something smarter than ourselves, we'd be able to solve all the world's problems. And in that episode, he says, we already know the solution to the vast majority of the problems that we have. We just choose not to solve them. We make that choice. Exactly. Like
poverty.
And I thought that was, I thought that was great. And I very much enjoyed that episode.
There was a bit in that episode where the guy, what was his name? Josh Schrey. He's got his own podcast called the Emerald Podcast or whatever, but he was talking about how, you know, if you take everything to its logical conclusion, which you kind of need to when you're dealing with people who are very powerful and or very rich, because it's easy to think, oh, well, because they've got some kind of status, they must be right. But if you take their ideas to the logical conclusion, they basically want to replace humans, or a lot of humans, not including themselves, maybe they want to upload themselves into the machine, with machines, with artificial intelligence, kind of a transhumanist kind of approach. And that's a bit worrying, I would say. Like, transhumanism is on a spectrum, for sure, but the far end of that spectrum is, like, an elite of humans directing machines, which is kind of a position which I've only recently discovered is called kind of antinatalism, where you think that it's not a good idea for the human race to keep on expanding and having more babies, because actually either it's not a good place to bring people into, or that's not what we're trying to do in life. You know, like, I think it's very interesting when there's ideas behind the ideas which are being shared. Their most recent episode of their podcast, which I haven't listened to yet, episode 83, is called Taylor Swift Is Not Alone, the Deep Fake Nightmare Sweeping the Internet.
Yeah, I just read somebody wrote a post about how the MAGAs in the United States are freaking out about the Super Bowl and Taylor Swift, and like basically there's a conspiracy theory that the Biden administration and like the Democrats and that entire apparatus has rigged the Super Bowl. The theory is they've rigged the Super Bowl so that the Taylor Swift and whatever her boyfriend's name is for whatever team, that they can then endorse Biden and try to swing the election with their endorsement, which is silly. I mean, it's silly because like Taylor Swift endorsed Biden in 2020 anyway, and the way that she's spoken about politics has been, you know, more on the Democratic side. She trolled Trump on Twitter back when it was called Twitter. And I just thought that was really funny that there's apparently like this big uproar about Taylor Swift. It's like people have nothing better to do than come up with random conspiracy theories about famous people.
But conspiracy theories are really interesting. So actually, the one that I read, which you might have read, was from Garbage Day. Is that the one that you read?
No, because I got off Substack. And
has he moved yet, or he's going to anyway?
I don't know. I haven't gotten any email updates, but I left Substack, and then suddenly my inbox no longer has tons of the newsletters. Oops.
Okay, so I haven't left Substack yet because I haven't sent out my first newsletter from Microblog, because you have to wait 30 days before you can import your subscribers. But the one that I read was called, on Garbage Day, was called Taylor Swift versus the Manosphere, okay, which I thought was an interesting title. And it talks about... There's a whole bit about it. I'll just send people the link and stuff. But it's basically like how she's not fitting into people's norms, like you said. Mm. Like, started off in terms of, like, doing country music and being, like, you know, traditional, you know, woman, settled down with a man, you know, white woman, whatever. Then all of a sudden, inverted commas, she's doing all this stuff about feminism and this and that. And the guy, Ryan Broderick, behind Garbage Day is hilarious, especially with the way he deconstructs what is going on. It just sounds absolutely ridiculous, because it is. But conspiracy theories are interesting because they're invented to try and explain the world in a simple way for people who don't understand complexity.
Hmm.
So, for example, at my daughter's football, there's one of the dads who is a conspiracy theorist, and he's not stupid, like, he's got a professional job, but there's definitely something going on with him and other conspiracy theorists I've come across. My dad has been a conspiracy theorist at different points in his life. But I think we all believe certain things which we possibly at our heart of hearts know aren't completely true. It's just that this is a little bit more batshit. So, for example, people who believe that diesel generators are in wind turbines because they're actually making the wind turbines work rather than just starting the blades when there's not very much wind is a crazy idea. People who think that, like, COVID is implanting chips into our bodies is crazy. I noticed that everyone thinks that that's terrible, but when Elon Musk literally wants to put a chip into our bodies with Neuralink, that's somehow cool. Like, it just shows the difference between people's worldviews and frames of reference. But let's keep on going on the Taylor Swift thing. Because there's the things, I think we both put a link in about feminism and about some polls which have been done recently, yeah?
Yeah, I recently read, I don't know actually how I accessed it, but I read an article in the Financial Times that was not behind a paywall. It's now behind a paywall, and Web Archive wouldn't spit out a link for me either, so I can't actually revisit what I read. But it was talking about some research that showed that Gen Z political views, well, not just political, but political, social, economic views, are diverging by gender. And it was showing that, like, young women tend to have more progressive views, and young men are starting to form more right-wing views. And there was a graph that was showing this research, and it had two arrows, you know, and they were just, like, completely divergent. And I thought that that was really interesting, because it seems like the state of the world today is actually causing people to have different views based on gender. And I wonder what the link there is with, you know, with the Me Too movement blowing up, with feminism becoming something that's quite mainstream, the amount of gender discussions that's happening in the workplace, in the schools, et cetera, and how that's actually, you know, I'm always interested in how the topic of feminism is impacting also the way that men feel.
Mm-hmm. So I have some thoughts about this. So the first thing, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, that's a bit rubbish not being able to go onto the Financial Times website, there's a Chrome extension. I know Laura used Firefox, but there's a Chrome extension which is you can use on any Chrome-based browser. So I use Arc, for example, and it allows you to bypass the paywall. I'll let you decide whether that is an ethical thing to do, especially given that this was previously available. So I have no qualms in doing that. So two articles then, this one and the Financial Times that you've just summarized, which has these graphs in, which I'll just talk about in a moment. But then I'm going to link that to another article, which is in The Guardian, which should be accessible to everyone. And that one's called Gen Z Boys and Men More Likely Than Baby Boomers to Believe Feminism is Harmful, says Paul.
Trigger warning, there's a picture of Andrew Tate, if you know who Andrew Tate is and are physically disgusted by his existence, then
yeah.
FYI.
So, you know, if you do get to see the Financial Times graphs, there's South Korea, the US, Germany, and the UK. South Korea is the most extreme. Like, the graph basically shows liberal going upwards and conservative going downwards. This is support for liberal and conservative parties based on polling. So women is going up towards liberalism and men is going sharply down towards conservatism in South Korea. A little bit less pronounced in the US and in Germany. But basically what's happening in all of these places, the women part of the graph is going up really sharply in all of those. Mm-hmm. Only in South Korea is it going down sharply. And if you look at the UK one, which is the link I want to make here because I live here and also the link to The Guardian, the men one, like it's gone up towards liberalism in the last decade between 2010 and 2020 quite a lot. And then it's just kind of stabilized. So to say that's gone down is misleading, I would say. Mm-hmm. The women one has gone up from 2010 to now huge amounts, and I guess that's because of Me Too and lots of things going on there, and the internet just basically allowing women to realize that, oh, we don't have to like take this shit anymore. But the Gen Z one in The Guardian, right, I thought was a way, like, it's not incorrect, but I think this is misleadingly reported, right? So mm-hmm. They love, both The Guardian and the BBC, love talking about Andrew Tate because they get loads of hits on their website. They love him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the BBC interviewed Andrew Tate because it got lots of his followers watching the interview and everything like that. So if you look underneath what's going on here, there's not a lot really going on. I'm a parent of two teenagers. I am always super concerned about them getting radicalized or going down the wrong way in life or, you know, being nudged in the wrong direction or whatever. But let's just look at the kind of chart that's in this. Well, you describe it to me, Laura. Like, if you look at this chart, one in five men aged 16 to 29 who have heard of Andrew Tate say they have a positive view of him. How would you interpret that chart if it wasn't in this article?
Well, I mean, first of all, we read left to right,
yeah.
You know, I don't know if you're aware, but here in English, we read left to right. And when information is presented in a way that feels backwards. So this chart, dear listener, and I encourage you to go look at it, like the big chunk of the chart is on the right side. Which leads you to believe that actually matches the headline. The headline says that one in five men have a positive view, but the chart, the big chunk is the unfavorable view. So like it's kind of backwards. So if you don't pay attention to what you're looking at, if you just kind of scan it, you might get the wrong idea about how many people actually have a very favorable view. So that's one thing. But also, like, I honestly find it kind of incredible that this person, Andrew Tate, continues to get airtime. And I find it a bit irresponsible of The Guardian and the BBC to continue to give this person airtime, given what he has been charged with in Romania, given the amount of links to sex trafficking and the fiercely, fiercely anti-women shit that he says. Like, why do we continue to put people like this on, like, in our articles? This is one of those things where it's like people who are just false don't deserve the same airtime, and it is inherently false to, you know, be for femicide. So
yeah, this is a guy who says he is absolutely a misogynist, and this, just to quote from the article before going to the chat a bit more, Tate preaches that young men should take control of their own lives, shouting at them in one recent video over footage of him vaping, firing a gun, and driving a sports car. You're not supposed to be happy. You're supposed to be monumentally influential and capable. Now, I've got a 17-year-old son, who, you know, I'm not going to overshare here, but, like, the pandemic was rough on all teenagers. And to then be telling teenagers that you're not supposed to be happy is, like, quite worrying. Anyway, let's go back to the graph, the chart. So this chart, go on.
No, I just noticed there's a second one.
Yeah, there is.
I didn't even scroll down. I just got hooked on the first one and then all angry about it.
Let's get to that one next, right? So the first one, as you say, is a misleading way of representing data. So the gray box on here says that there was no response. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you've actually got a decent number of no responses and also a decent number of neither favorable nor unfavorable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, like that skews the results a little bit as well. So if I think about what I was like age 17, like when are you likely, given that men reach their sexual peak at age 17, right? And all of the hormones and the testosterone is going on. Like, when are you likely to be most kind of like, oh, I'm a man kind of thing? It's going to be at that age. And so to actually have a very unfavorable view or a somewhat unfavorable view, and we're talking like 70% of people have an unfavorable view between 16 and 29 who are men, like that. And then you've got this huge chunk of neither favorable nor unfavorable and no response. It's such a small amount who are actually in favor that I just don't see what the news is here. I just don't get it. And they're not comparing it against like older men. They're comparing it against all respondents. And I know for a fact that like men my age and also older men would be further over, I would think, in my experience. There's a lot more toxic masculinity in my generation than there is in my son's generation. So that's the first one. The second one is 1 in 6 British men aged 16 to 29 say feminism has done more harm than good. So that's 1 in 6. So just to put that in perspective, that's about, what, 17%?
Yeah.
Now, when I, again, talked to my son, I mentioned the word feminism, and he said, oh, isn't that just like women want to be better than men? I was like, oh my goodness, what? I've done a terrible job of bringing you up, first of all. And secondly, like, as soon as I explained, like, that's not what feminism is, though, he's like, all right, cool. So if schools aren't teaching what feminism is, yeah, and obviously terrible parents like me aren't telling their kids at home, like, what does the word sound like? We've talked about this before. What does feminism sound like if you don't actually know what it is? Like, I just think it's a non-story and it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I haven't read the article. I'm just amazed that it is on the Guardian.
I have actually noticed that the Guardian's a little bit more like rage baity than it used to be.
Well, I mean, to be fair, anything with Andrew Tate is going to induce rage in anybody who actually knows what feminism is. So there you go. I guess they do get some clicks with that.
Well, look at the related stories right at the bottom. 1 in 7 HR heads believe men are better suited to top jobs. So again, that's what, 14%?
Like, yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Anyway, let's move on, unless you want to say anything else on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can talk about feminism and gender issues all day, but before I start ranting, and because we're already, you know, a good half an hour into our ramble chat, let's end with something that is not triggering for 50% of society.
We're going to end already? Are we really that far in? My goodness. Wow.
I know. I feel like we just opened up the room and we just started chatting. We have way too many links per day. But okay, let's, so we talked a little bit about AI and about how, you know, the philosophical quandary about that. So great podcast, great link for that. Talked a bit about conspiracy theories and Taylor Swift. I'm definitely going to read that Garbage Day newsletter in a minute. Talked about crappy presentation of data and in relationship to feminism. And we've talked about Wikipedia. That was not in any particular order. So what should we, what is this monumental trees?
What's yeah, that? Let's finish by let's, talking about trees. So someone shared this on the Fediverse, and it's basically, you know, like big trees that might be famous in their local area for being very old or very big or nice shape, whatever. It's basically like a database of these monumental trees from around the world.
That is so cool. I love that. I wonder, that makes me want to check and see if my local big tree, I have to go look up the name of it though, because I can't remember. And you can add a new tree.
Yeah. So if you go to like countries, and then I've gone to United Kingdom, and then you can zoom in. So I'm zooming in where I live in Morpeth, and there's one in Rothbury. And what does it say? Western hemlock on the grounds of Cragside House. The girth of the tree, measured a height of 80 centimetres, is 7.11 metres in August 2013. As this is a tree with multiple trunks, the girth can be larger than what would be expected of a tree of its age.
Cool.
So it's got some photographs, all that kind of stuff. I actually know exactly where that tree is.
What's the, have you ever seen a giant sequoia?
Not in person, no.
I got my haircut yesterday, and on the like counter at the hairdresser place was a pine cone that was probably about 2 feet long and like almost as big as my head. And the only time I've ever, I didn't know if it was real and I didn't touch it because it was like far away and it was covered in dust. But the only time I've ever seen a pine cone of that size is in the Sequoia Forest near Fresno, California. Yeah. There's some great trees in California. We should go there. We need to find a cool project to work on that requires us to go to California, because I haven't been to California in a while. I'd like to see some big trees, and there's some great diving out there too. So that's my 2024 goal.
When I used to teach the American West, so when I taught the American West, I don't think ever been to America, which is a weird thing to do, to teach about a country you've never been to. But I remember trying to help the kids who would have been like 15, 16, understand what it would have been like to receive messages about oranges the size of basketballs and, you know, peaches that are, you know, and you can just dip your hand into the stream and pull out fish. And then like them saying that they're building roads through trees because the trees are so thick. Like, yeah. And then I thought that can't be true. And then you look it up and of course it is true. That they were building, okay, single track roads, but like going through the middle of trees is kind of insane.
Also, Route 1 in California, you can drive through a giant redwood. It's so cool. And actually, on the front page, the biggest tree in the world, where I have actually been to, General Sherman in the Sequoia Forest, also in California. I was there a couple of years ago. I forget why, but I was in California a few years back and went and saw this tree, but you couldn't get anywhere near it because like anything that is the biggest of its kind, it was crawling with tourists. So, you know, I looked from far away and marveled at how tiny humans are. And then I went for a hike and saw also very, very big trees. So, yeah.
Well, it reminds me, there's a tree in Nottingham, which is where I was born and grew up until I was like 4 or 5. And there's this really, really old tree. And there's like the myth of like Robin Hood hidden it or something, which is just bollocks.
Is that the one that some kid cut down?
No. That's the one on Hadrian's Wall, which was this one in Sycamore Gap, which wasn't that old, but was very kind of emblematic of the region. So this one in Nottingham with Robin Hood. And yes, that tree was on Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, even though it's a bit anachronistic because there's no way that you'd be able to get to that tree from where they were. Anyway,
that's not how movies work.
I used to like swing on, like play around and stuff when I was a little kid. When I went back with my kids, it was like guarded off, surrounded, had tree supports on, all this kind of stuff, which I was really pleased with, you know, because you want to look after these things. But also it was kind of a shame that people have obviously damaged stuff to such a degree that they have to do that.
Yeah, this is like another thing that I find incredible is the amount of damage some, like the amount of damage that some people will do to the natural things without even caring, like with no thought whatsoever. That's I don't understand it. Although, yeah, no. I was about to say, although I probably carved my initials in a tree at some point, but I actually never did. That's
I've definitely carved my initials in a tree.
I've carved my initials in my school desks when I was a kid.
Yeah. That tree's already dead, though, so that's about
right.
So things we didn't get to, which maybe we'll talk about in a future episode, is stuff about copyright and about a unified theory of fucks. That was an interesting one as well. Stuff about consensus reality and disinformation and schooling and Blue Sky launching RSS feeds. Did we mention last time we were on Blue Sky? I think we did, didn't we? Yes.
I joined it during the last show.
Have you been logging in? And
I have it open and stuff, but I honestly, like, I barely post to the Fediverse. I don't know. I just don't have much to say most of the time, or I have tons of stuff to say, but I'm too lazy to say it on the web. I don't know what I'm not really socialing at the moment, social mediaing. But yes, I joined Blue Sky because you gave me an invite. That was something that happened live on the DAO of WoW. Laura joins Blue Sky. So, but I haven't looked at it since, and now I don't even
know. Most of the people I'm following tend to be like Matt Jukes and like doing stuff in digital government stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a few other people. Anyway, let's leave it there.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening to episode 2 of season 9, Doug and Laura Ramble Chat.
Rambo chat would be interesting. Just a chat about Rambo.
Yeah. Maybe next time.
Yeah. Okay, cheers for now. Bye.